inside my car. I got pictures, got candy, I'm a lovable man, and I can take you to the nearest star. I'm your vehicle, baby, I'll take you anywhere you wanna go. I'm your vehicle, woman, by now I'm sure you know that I love you, love you. I need you, need you. I want you, got to have you, child. Great God in heaven, you know I love.
You listen to Live with Rank on this Free Speech Friday, and I thank you. Online with me, a lengthy interview like we always like to have. I like to get in deep with him. Dr. Gary Wolfram from Hillsdale College, where he holds the William E. Simon Chair of Economics. I assume at some day, Dr. Wolfram, you'll have to give up that vaunted chair to some young pup or something, right? Oh, wait, maybe
not
I should turn.
Not for a while.
You're going to stay there for a while. All right. Well, that's good. That's good. Now, just quickly, I'd like to, you've answered the question. For those of you who maybe missed it, too bad. Sorry. I'll try to put it out there as podcast. But he went in to give us an explanation of what macroeconomics is, what microeconomics is, how people view it. And we found out, just like in a trial, you can get two experts, one that says, no, that's blue, and one that says, no, that's red. You know, and they have their models that prove it. And that's what happens in economics, macroeconomics. Is that fair to say? Is that an okay analogy?
Yeah, and there, like I said, you know, Mankiw wrote this paper called Macroeconomics in Disarray in 1996, and just this past year, Paul Romer wrote an article called The Trouble with Macroeconomics. I mean, macroeconomics is is not something that anyone would say there's consensus on.
And, so let me ask you this then, Dr. Wolfram, you're a microeconomist, right?
Yeah, and but clearly you can affect the economic structure, you know, what's going on in the economy as a whole, by the government doing things such as regulating with Dodd-Frank, and you know, Obamacare made it much more expensive to hire labor, and so lots of people are working part time that would be like to work full time, and all sorts of things that. As a microeconomist, you would say, wow, that seems pretty obvious. If I increase the price of labor, then what's going to happen? They're going to substitute capital or machinery for labor, and they're going to hire fewer people and have them work less hours, and, you know, and that is what happened. And so,
well, the reason I asked you that, Dr. Wolfram, if you're a micro, and you said, well, you told me what you said about macroeconomics. When you guys have all you economists have conferences, do you guys in the micro kind of look at those guys in the macro and call them nerds or anything? Oh, those are those macroeconomists. Yeah, look at them. They have pocket protectors. Come on. You guys do that? Anything like that?
No, not really.
Okay. Now, back to what I want. Sorry to interrupt you, but you were stepping all over my joke, and you didn't even know I was coming out with it. And you kind of got into it. Stephen Moore addresses, and I want you to explain to the listeners if you agree or disagree. He went into the policies during the Obama years, which were that he believed was anti-growth, which is tax increases, minimum wage hikes, Obamacare, Dodd-Frank regulations, massive debt spending, the Paris Climate Accord, and EPA assault against the American industry, a massive expansion of programs like food stamps and disability, and he goes on and on and on. And he said that's why we've been in a long recession instead of a long, slow recovery, because some experts out there are saying we're due to another recession because of our recovery. And would you agree with that or not agree? And what are the policies that Stephen Moore, as part of the economic team with President Trump, what are they going to do to change that?
Well, I mean, Steve's right. If you look through each of those items, it made it more expensive to produce. It made it harder to comply with government regulation. It created all sorts of uncertainty. One of the main things that markets need is certainty in what the rules of the game are. And if they keep changing what the rules of the game are, then you're not going to undertake that risk. You need to be innovative. We grow because of innovation. You know, we have things today. The average person has things today that the richest person in the world 100 years ago had no access to, you know, television, antibiotics, et cetera. John D. Rockefeller couldn't buy any of that stuff. And so innovation requires, though, that you sort of know what the rules of the game are. Is the government going to take all your profit away if you're successful? Is the government going to outlaw your product at some point? All this government intervention that the Obama administration had created what a guy named Bob Higgs at the Independent Institute has called regime uncertainty. And he explains that's one of the reasons we got the Great Depression, was because of all the uncertainties about what Franklin Roosevelt was going to do next. So, the main thing to get out of this is if the government would stay out of the way, then the economy would grow at a much faster rate. In fact, a friend of mine, Brian Westbury, has been calling this the plow horse economy. He says, look, markets are so innovative, they've been growing in spite of what government's been doing. And if the government would just get out of the way, then we'd be growing at 3.5%, 4.5%.
And that's what Stephen Moore and many people in the economic team or advising the president have been saying, that you can reach this 3.5%, 4%. Maybe not 4%. I think they've backed off that a little bit, 3.5%. It really can be attained, and due to a lot of the things I know you have said, despite all the walls that were put up, despite all the regulations and uncertainty, the American spirit pushed through that and did its best it can, because it doesn't want to just sit there on its laurels and, you know, sit in a corner. Well, it didn't go, let's put it this way, and you can agree with me or not, it didn't go to its safe space to do coloring and discuss something with the therapy dogs, why they had sippy drinks from the sippy, whatever, Capri Suns or what have you, and, wanted to be protected by anybody. It just went out there and battled.
Well, let me give you a quote from Adam Smith from 1776.
Well, you're quite the name dropper today, are you not?
Yes, I am.
Do you know all these people? Have you met all these people?
Adam and I were good friends
okay.
back in the day.
Okay.
But he wrote, the natural effort of every individual to better his own condition, when suffered to exert itself with freedom and security, is so powerful a principle that it is alone and without any assistance not only capable of carrying on the society to wealth and prosperity, but of surmounting 100 impertinent obstructions with which the folly of human laws too often encumbers its operations. I mean, Adam Smith knew. I mean, and think of all the folly of human laws that Adam Smith had no idea government was going to impose.
Right. Explain to people when you and what years you and Adam Smith were buddies.
That was 1776.
1776. So you are quite a seasoned man. You've seen a lot in your lifetime, so you have a lot of wisdom that you have built up since you and Adam Smith were doing economic models with your rattlers back then.
Okay.
Well, that's good. Well, that's why I have you on, you know, because of the 200 and something plus years. So what should the president, what do you like what the president, Trump's, what he's put forth on, what he's behind, let's put it that way, when it comes to economic policies, and what might you not like?
Well, the first thing is the corporate income tax. That we have the highest, basically the highest corporate income tax rates in the world, other than a couple, I think, Qatar and some other place. But among the industrialized nations, by far, we have. And so what happens is we end up with, it's way more expensive to produce goods and services in the United States than it otherwise should be. And it creates all sorts of problems. If you think about who actually ends up paying the corporate income tax, it can't be a thing called a corporation. Either consumers that buy the product, or people who work for the company, or people who own stock in the company, those are the folks that end up paying for the tax. And the people will respond.
Hold on. Are you trying to tell me and my listeners there's no Mr. GM? There's no
correct.
Mr. Google who
That's
actually pulls
correct.
It out of his pocket? Now, come
but
on.
I'll tell you what. If Apple pays 12% corporate income tax in Ireland and 39% here, then they're going to be producing things in Ireland. And if we, and one of the silly things we do is if you earned, if Apple earns income in Ireland and brings it back into the United States, it will have to pay the difference between the Ireland's tax rate of 12% and our federal rate of 35%. And so why would they do that? It makes it extremely difficult for them to bring that money back and build servers or build manufacturing or do technology.
There's just no
incentive.
Yeah, you're right. There's just no incentive to do it. I know my listeners have heard it from me and certainly probably from a lot of the cable shows or news and punditry that they read or listen to or watch. But it's true. I mean, this whole offshore money and bringing that back, it would be stupid. That would be like you saying, I have $10,000 sitting over in a bank in Germany. And if I bring it back here, I'm going to have to pay $33,500, let's just say. Let's make it easy. Let's say there's a 10% tax there. I'm going to have to pay $2,500 on top of the $1,000 I just paid. But if I spend it over there, I don't have to. What would you guys do? Of course you would, unless you're not very smart. You wouldn't bring it back here. You would do what's best for you.
People respond to incentives, and so reducing the corporate income tax would make a major difference in economic activity in the United States. So I really like that. We do need to change Obamacare. I mean, that was a real mess, and we ought to just go to medical savings accounts for Medicare and Medicaid. That's what we ought to do.
Well, we'll have to talk about that another time because I'm running out of time here. But I do want to thank you very much for spending as much time and going to as much detail as we have. And truly, it's your 36th wedding anniversary on July 4th.
Yep.
Well, have a great wedding anniversary to you, and I am sure your lovely wife. And give them your Twitter account because we got to get those numbers up.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah. It's Gary_Wolfram. And I am still in my battle with John Miller, so make sure you follow
who's
me
a journalist guy, so you have to. All right, thanks, Dr. Wolfram. Appreciate that very much. You have a great day. You're listening to Live at the Rank. If you'd like to get in, give us a call, 269-441-9595.
95.3 WBCK.